The Jewish Hour can now be heard on jcastnetwork.org, your portal to Jewish broadcasting. It's also on iTunes and on your smartphone using the Stitcher app. Welcome to the Jewish Hour. I'm your host, Herschel Finman. It's Lag BaOmer, and we're having a great time. That's one of the things we're going to talk about in this part of the show. In this half hour of the show, we're going to do a rebroadcast. As mentioned a couple weeks ago, that the Jewish Hour won this year's Seymour Rocco Award for Excellence in Media Broadcasting, and specifically for an interview that we did with the last Nazi hunter, Rabbi Ephraim Zuroff. So we're rebroadcasting that today, the interview with Ephraim Zuroff. That'll be in this half hour of the show. We have lots of very good music for you today. As it is Lag BaOmer, there is a suspension of the a cappella rule, and we're allowed to listen to real music, live music. You can get married today, everything. Basically, the sphera, this quasi-mourning we've been in since the end of Passover, is suspended for the day. And everybody is just so happy. It's International Jewish Barbecue Day, and we're going to talk about that. It's the portion of Bamidbar, which is Numbers chapter 1, but we're going to talk about the significance of Lag BaOmer. We've got a tremendous Hasidic story for you. And before we do anything else, the Jewish Hour's Ben Armstrong is going to read the news.
Two Arab demonstrators were killed and another wounded during a protest outside of Ofer prison on Israel's Independence Day. The mob began throwing rocks at soldiers when the soldiers opened fire. Mahmoud Abbas said the Palestinian Authority was planning on ceasing joint patrols with the Israelis after the shootings. Arab terrorists firebombed a bus carrying sixth-grade girls at the Tomb of the Patriarchs in Hebron. The tour was officially approved by the Ministry of the Interior. No one was injured in the attack. Police are looking for the attackers. The hills around Hebron were hit by a series of water thefts from Israel's Merkarot water. Several Arab groups were discovered stealing water from the water mains and directing it to Arab villages. The entire Israeli village of Har Homa lost power for an entire afternoon. Former Israeli President Ehud Olmert was sentenced to 6 years for his part in the Holy Land bribery scandal. Shula Zakin, an aide to Olmert, was sentenced to 11 months. Zakin could have received 5 years, but her sentence was reduced because she turned in state's evidence in the case against Olmert. A woman assaulted a Jewish mother and her baby in Paris while shouting anti-Semitic slurs. The attacker shook the stroller belonging to the 27-year-old mother while her 6-month-old baby was inside, threatening to kill the baby. Israel's embassy in Turkey canceled a celebration of Israel's Independence Day following the deadly mine collapse in Turkey. Israeli President Shimon Peres also sent a letter of condolence to Turkish President Erdogan. And finally, Pope Benedict will be visiting Israel on May 24th through the 26th. The pontiff will visit the Western Wall and other sites in Jerusalem. While in Palestinian-controlled areas, the Pope will visit Bethlehem. And that's the news.
Some of the best jobs in the world are in the radio and television industry, and you too can join the workforce in as little as 8 months when you complete your hands-on training at the Specs Howard School of Broadcast Arts located in Southfield, Michigan. At Specs Howard School, students get to play and learn at the same time. Imagine spending your class time behind the microphone, spinning music and hosting your own radio show, or designing and lighting a set for your own TV program, running a camera, learning to edit, directing a program. When you go to Specs, your day will be anything but dull. And if school is this fun, imagine how exciting it is to work in the growing industry. In addition, the credits you earn while attending Specs Howard School are currently accepted at 14 area colleges and universities. If you've always wanted the best job in the world, call for a tour of Specs Howard School at 248-358-9000. That's 248-358-9000, or visit them on the web at specshoward.edu. Specs Howard School of Broadcast Arts. This is where you start. Herschel Finman here. You're listening to the Jewish Hour. We have on the line Dr. Ephraim Zuroff, who's with the Simon Wiesenthal Center. He's the chief Nazi hunter there for that organization. They've started a new operations called Operation Last Chance 2. How are you today, Dr. Zuroff?
I'm fine, thank you.
Good to hear. First of all, let's back up a bit, a whole bit, okay? This Nazi hunter, let's hear about that. Tell us about what is this idea? I know you're not the first one, and I know this is all after Simon Wiesenthal, who was the quintessential Nazi hunter. But tell us about this idea of tracking down Nazis.
Well, I'm basically the last Nazi hunter, which means that I'm the only person who's not working for a government whose job it is to try and facilitate the prosecution of Nazi war criminals. And it's basically done in three different ways. When someone asks me, what's my job? I say I'm one-third detective to find these people, one-third historian to find the historical evidence. That's actually my occupation, my professional occupation, and one-third political lobbyist to try and create political will in the countries which should be prosecuting the person in question. And unfortunately, many of the countries who should be doing this are very reluctant to do so. And a big part of my job is trying to convince them to do so.
Okay, so you have three very daunting tasks. Then each one sounds like it's a big pain in the neck in all its own ways. So how do you go about doing this? I mean, we're talking the Holocaust. World War II was over. It's going on 70 years. So we're assuming that 70 years ago, most people who affiliated with the Nazi Party during World War II are no longer walking around. And those who are really old.
That's correct. The people that we're dealing with are at least in their late 80s, if not in their 90s. And this is one of the obstacles that we face, because the advanced age of the suspect sometimes arouses opposition or skepticism. And one of my jobs in that respect is to really to explain to the public and to governments why this is really still very important, very essential, and why this should be done. And,
okay. Let's stop there then, Dr. Zuroff. Why is this so essential that 70 years later we're worried about a bunch of old men?
Very simple. Five basic points and two personal observations. One, the passage of time in no way diminishes the guilt of the killers. The fact that time has passed since the crime was committed is totally irrelevant vis-a-vis the person's guilt. Two, old age should not afford protection for people who committed such heinous crimes. Just because someone has reached the age of 90 or even 95, that doesn't turn a mass murderer or a regular murderer into a righteous Gentile. Three, each of the victims of the Nazis deserve that an effort be made to find their killers. People who turned innocent men, women, and children into victims simply because they had been classified as enemies of the Reich. Four, I think it sends a very powerful message that we're still looking for these people. And basically, what we want people to understand is that if you harm the Jewish people or other innocent victims, even decades later, there'll be an effort to try and hold you accountable. Five, these trials are important in the fight against Holocaust denial and Holocaust distortion, which is a new phenomenon in Eastern Europe, where after the end of communism, the countries of Eastern Europe are trying to rewrite the history books and trying to hide or minimize the crimes, the participation of their own nationals in Holocaust crimes, and to convince Europe initially and later the world that communism is just as bad as Nazism and the Shoah is not something unique. And this is a very dangerous phenomenon that we've seen in recent years and has been getting stronger and stronger. Now, just two personal observations.
Go ahead.
One is that I've often been asked whether or not, after so many years, these people must feel sorry for what they did. And it's an interesting question, and a question which I would even strengthen by saying that certainly in the last 20 years, there's been a veritable explosion of information about the Holocaust, books, films, theater, internet, and it would not be unusual for people to read about the Holocaust, to learn about the Holocaust, including these people who had committed the crimes, and they could reach the conclusion and said, you know what we did many years ago when we were young men and women was the crimes that are described as the Holocaust, and you know what, we made a mistake. It was the wrong thing to do. They could say we were young, we were brainwashed, we were convinced the Jew was the enemy. But I have to say that in my experience, and I'm doing this already almost 33 years, 6 years as a researcher in Israel for the U.S. Justice Department's Office of Special Investigations, and the last 27 years as the chief Nazi hunter at the Simon Wiesenthal Center, I've never encountered a single case of a Nazi war criminal who ever expressed any regret.
Any no remorse. Wow.
And the other point is this, that when you look at these people, don't see a frail old person in front of you, but think of a young man in the height of his prime, his physical prime, the height of his strength, at which time he devoted all his energies and strength to the mass murder of innocent men, women, and children. And that's what you have to keep in mind.
Okay. Our guest, if you're just tuning in, is Dr. Ephraim Zuroff. He's a chief Nazi hunter for the Simon Wiesenthal Center. What qualifies a person as a Nazi war criminal? If you have a guy who was, say, a guard who was just like standing sentry to make sure people didn't escape, is that a war criminal?
Well, if the person was a guard in a camp like Treblinka or Sobibor, the death camps and concentration camps where numerous people were murdered, then he's also part of the problem. And he shares a share of the responsibility, not, of course, as responsible as the commander of the camp, the person who created the camp, but certainly part of the responsibility. The definition of a Nazi war criminal is basically anyone who, in the service of Nazi Germany or allied with Nazi Germany, actively participated in the persecution and or murder of innocent civilians.
Okay. And it doesn't matter if it's one or more. Just one is
enough. The more people that this person killed, the higher he'll be on our list of priorities.
Okay, that brings me to the next question. What tier Nazi criminal is left to be found? I'm assuming that Nuremberg trial took care of like the really big guys. And then over the years, we had like the famous ones like Eichmann and Mengele and et cetera.
Well, so Mengele was never brought to trial.
Never brought to trial. He died. Yeah, but people were looking for him.
So, swimming in the ocean near Sao Paulo, Brazil.
Right. So, interesting. Okay, so he got same, kind of like the same thing that he gave.
I actually, in my recent book, Operation Last Chance, One Man's Quest to Bring Nazis to Justice, I actually tell the story of how his body was found, ultimately found in 1986, and it's a fascinating story because it clearly shows that the problem was the lack of political will to search and find him. And ultimately, as a result of a letter discovered by the Simon Wiesenthal Center, which said that Mengele had actually been arrested and released by the U.S. Army near Vienna in 1946, the U.S. government started looking for Mengele, And once the U.S. government started looking for Mengele, the Germans joined in, Israel joined in, and lo and behold, they carried out a search in the office of Hans Seidelmeier, the attorney for the Mengele family, and then they discovered all the correspondence with him and discovered that he had died of a heart attack while swimming in the ocean near Sao Paulo in 1979. Now, imagine for a moment that that search would have been carried out in 1975. Mm-hmm. 65. Mengele could have been caught. He could have been put on trial in what definitely would have been one of the most important trials of a Nazi war criminal. But it didn't happen. It's a shame that it didn't happen.
Right, indeed. Okay, so back to the question as to, well, what sort of involvement are the people you're looking for now? Where are we down to? We've taken off the top echelons and we've cut off the layers of commanders and whatnot. So who are these people that the Sieben Wiesenthal are looking for, without being
okay,
very general?
We are looking, I'll give you an example. Number one on our most wanted list is a Hungarian police officer who was a commander of one of the ghettos in the city of Košice, now Slovakia, during World War II under Hungarian occupation. A man named Laszlo Csatari, who sent 15,700 Jews to the Auschwitz death camp, where 80% were murdered. Other people, Gerhard Sommer, an SS officer, carried out a massacre of Italian civilians in Italy in 1944. Hundreds of civilians were murdered. People like Vladimir Katryuk, who was served in a Ukrainian Schutzmannschaft, that's a security police battalion, was involved in the murder of Jews and non-Jews in Belarus.
Okay. So these are still pretty...
I would encourage people interested to visit our website.
That was my next question.
We have a list, our most wanted list.
Okay, how many
the
people...
The website address is operationlastchance1word.org.
Okay, how many people are on that list?
Ten most wanted. But it's basically a list of the people that we hope will be brought to justice in the coming year. Now, there's people who we know where they are. And
okay, these are people that you know for sure are alive and living their lives as normal civilians.
Right, correct, yeah.
Okay, let's say the top one. How do you know the top one? What was his name again? I don't know, it doesn't matter, but...
Laszlo Csatari.
Yes, this heinous individual. How do you know where he is and what he's doing? And
well, let me tell you the story.
Go ahead.
Okay, we have something called Operation Last Chance, which offers financial rewards for information. And a little less than 2 years ago, I got an email from someone who asked me, am I still offering rewards for information about Nazi war criminals? I said yes. And this person said to me, well, I have some very important information about Laszlo Csatari. Now, I knew who Laszlo Csatari was because he had been stripped of his citizenship in Canada, and then he had voluntarily left Canada and disappeared. So I knew that the guy was really a serious Nazi war criminal. So I said, listen, we have the reward. If this information leads to his prosecution or punishment, we will very gladly give you the money. And he gave us the information. The information turned out to be correct. And I'm happy to say that last month, Laszlo Csatari was charged by the Hungarian prosecutors. And we hope that within 2 months, he's going to be on trial in Budapest. It's going to be a very important trial.
Okay. So... So I'm confused. Is he on the most wanted list? Do you have him? Where is he?
He is on the most wanted list, and he's under house arrest now awaiting trial.
Oh, okay. How could he be wanted
That's
if you have
good
him?
News.
How could he be wanted if you
what?
Have How could he be wanted if you have him?
No, but he hasn't been tried yet. So
okay.
Until he's tried, he's still on the list.
Gotcha. Okay, so I can't give you any money to any information that would lead to me getting any reward about him. Because you have him already. Okay, so if you're just tuning in again, our guest today is Dr. Ephraim Zuroff. He is the chief Nazi hunter of the Sieben Wiesenthal Center. They are engaged in something called Operation Last Chance, which is a push for the hunting down of Nazi criminals. Okay, Dr. Zuroff, if anybody knows of anybody, we're in the United States. So how many Nazi war criminals do you believe are in the United States, per se?
First of all, the United States has done a very good job in kicking out Nazi war criminals, because in the United States, Nazi war criminals cannot be tried for their crimes because their crimes were committed outside the United States and the victims were not American citizens. And consequently, the U.S. government faced a serious dilemma when they discovered that Nazi war criminals were living here, in the United States, that is, and they basically chose to prosecute these people for immigration and naturalization violations because they lied on their immigration papers, and the punishments for those, you know, for those violations are denaturalization
and then
deportation or extradition. If there's a country that wants to extradite them, that would take precedence. But in any event, the Americans have won cases against 107 Nazi war criminals already, and they're the most successful program in the world. So given the fact that the program is also very proactive, that's the good news. There are relatively few such Nazi war criminals left, although, for example, not long ago, a Nazi war criminal was exposed by Associated Press living in Minnesota.
Minnesota, we reported that on the show.
Involved a man named Michael Karkoch, a person who was involved in the murder of innocent Polish citizens, a member of Ukrainian Self-Defense Legion, and serving with the Ukrainian forces, allied with Nazi Germany. So that's one case. We actually have another case that we've come across of someone living in Colorado, and we're working on trying to see to it that this person, that the requisite legal action is taken against this person. So there are a few, not many, but that's thanks to the dedicated efforts of what used to be called the Office of Special Investigations, which was the agency of the U.S. Justice Department, whose job was to take legal action against the Nazi war criminals living in the United States.
Okay. Now, so the stereotypical image of a Nazi hiding out is in South America. Is that where your focus is?
No, that's over. Because the people who went to South America were the people who knew that they had to get out. In other words, these are people like Eichmann, Mengele, Schwamberger, Rauschmann. These are people who were very prominent, notorious Nazi war criminals, and they had to leave, and they had to adopt aliases and get out of Europe as quickly as possible, because it was obvious that everyone, in other words, that these people would be on the wanted list, and that the Allies would look for these people. So the what they call the rat lines, the escape routes, were set up by Catholic priests, headed by Bishop Hudel, alias Hudel, who's an Austrian bishop living in Rome, and wanted to help these people. And their escape from through the Alps, from Germany and Austria through the Alps to Italy, to Genoa, where they were given Red Cross passports and passage to Argentina, which was only too happy to accept them. And the Argentinian government actually set up a special committee to look for Nazi war criminals who might need a shelter, a haven, a refuge. And that committee, one of the people on that committee, by the way, was Evita Perón, believe it or not.
Uh-huh.
And these people streamed to Argentina. And we know this story.
Okay.
But those people are no longer alive, just based on the age, as you can imagine.
Unfortunately, is this?
And I went to. By the way, I went to Argentina, Chile, Uruguay, and Brazil, and we started Operation Last Chance there. But the truth of the matter is, we did not get any really serious information, any good information that could materialize into a serious case.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Is Bishop Hudel considered a war criminal because of his helping Nazis escape?
Well, he's a different category of Nazi war criminal because he didn't commit war crimes during the war. In other words, he didn't murder anybody, but he certainly was worthy of prosecution, but he's no longer alive.
Oh, okay. Fair enough. Okay, so now if people want to get in touch with your organization, maybe they know somebody, maybe they heard about somebody knowing about somebody, or maybe they're just curious to see what's going on with the Simon Wiesenthal Nazi Most Wanted list, how do they do that, Dr. Franz?
They go to to the website www.operationlastchance.org. And they can find our contact numbers. They can read the latest news on Nazi, on the efforts to bring Nazis to justice, and learn about all our activities. And they can also support our work if they so desire. That would be very nice.
Gotcha. Understood. We got that one. Okay, I wish you continued success, and thank you so much for coming on to the Jewish Hour.
My pleasure.
Okay, take care. We're going to take a quick commercial break, and we'll be right back. Right. You're listening to the Jewish Hour. Do you or someone you know have an addiction to opiates? Ready to take your life back but don't have the time for a long inpatient program? MDS Drug Detox is a team of physicians with extensive experience in the field of rapid drug detox under anesthesia. MDS is the nation's only rapid opiate detox under anesthesia facility with the same doctors, RNs, and certified paramedics attending the entire drug detox process. MDS Drug Detox is safe and effective. Their goal is to provide the best, the safest, and the most economical way to free you from your addiction. MDS uses the highest standards of care and the best FDA-approved medications. MDS Drug Detox understands what your concerns are. Make the call today, 888-637-6968, or go online to www.mdsdrugdetox.com. That's 888-637-6968, MDS Drug Detox. Hey, Herschel Finman here. You're listening to the Jewish Hour. We're playing regular music today, so let's get up and dance. This is Sam Glazer, Dancing in Jerusalem.
Heart's desire, take you to the place you want to go. Keep dreaming of the land of your history, and you'll walk in the streets before you know. On wings of eagles they took to the sky, not sure how this magic carpet would fly. Then cries of joy at the first shalom, 50,000 Yemenites coming home.
My heart is dancing in Jerusalem. My heart is dancing in Jerusalem. My heart is dancing in Jerusalem. My heart is dancing in Jerusalem.
Next came Ezra and Nehemiah, redeeming our brothers of Babylon. 2,000 years in the shook of Baghdad, soon every last soul would come along. Though it seemed impossible to achieve, Morocco's Jews were the next to leave. Every pillar of the Temple of Solomon, hear the sound of French ringing through Zion.
My heart is dancing in Jerusalem. My heart is dancing in Jerusalem.
Yerushalayim ircha berachamim tashuv ve'tishkon behetocha kasher tiparta. Be
escaped to Israel and watched in awe from the tribe of Dan in Ethiopia. Slipping through the border of the Sudan, they crossed the desert to reach their land. We marched for the rights of refused Nikim to help them realize their Aliyah dream. After 70 years of a living hell, see the celebration when that curtain fell.
My heart is dancing in Jerusalem. My heart is dancing in Jerusalem.
Assurance of quality and excellence in kosher? Look for the Michigan K on the label. What's it look like? The Lower Peninsula of Michigan with a K. It's a symbol of the Michigan Kosher Supervisors. Go to their website, mikosup.com. That's M-I for Michigan, K-O for kosher, and S-U-P for supervisors, mikosup.com, and find this month's featured products. You'll find Michigan K products wherever fine food is sold, especially at Natural Food Patch on West 9 Mile Road in Ferndale.
Herschel Finn, here you are listening to the Jewish Hour. This is our Lag BaOmer edition. And we're so happy. There's another song about dancing. This is the eighth day with their new song called Hulia, which means dance.
יודע, this time do me one favor, מצווה להיות בשמחה. שניים אני יודע, when you share it that's the flavor, מצווה להיות בשמחה.
This whole world spins on divine, nothing you can do when it's dancing time. Tanz, tanz, take, take, hule, hule, hule. Tanz, tanz, take, take, hi. Tanz, tanz, take, take, hule, hule, hule. Tanz, tanz, take, take, heilige, hule. This joy is blind to color, dark days like any other. Mitzvah leyubisimcha. You can dance the heavens open, just enough to slip some hope in. Mitzvah leyot besimcha. So what spins on divine, nothing you can do when it's dancing time. Tanz, tanz, take, take, hule, hule, hule. Tanz, tanz, take, take, hai, mikke, hule. Tanz, tanz, take, take, hule, hule, hule. Tanz, tanz, take, take, hai.
Yeah. Art Studio of Oak Park is now accepting students. Whether you're a real beginner or have been at it for a lifetime, the Art Studio of Oak Park has something for you. All levels welcome, all ages welcome. Private tutoring or small friendly classes. Flexible hours available. The Art Studio of Oak Park is very affordable. Make your life better. Put art into your life. The Art Studio of Oak Park offers lessons in a strictly kosher environment. Call today, 248-542-5087. That's 248-542-5087. It's great having an art room right in the neighborhood.
Hey, Shul Finman here. You're listening to The Jewish Hour. We got time for one more. This is Benny Friedman's song, but it's not done by Benny Friedman. This is the Yiddish version of a Hebrew song, Yesh Tikva, There's Hope, because we believe in God.
Hase gedrickt, se du zure, se du dages, a jeder mit sam frages, wie me geit, seht me schwarze, dit weiße Zippes Harz. Gedenk ob er als nein, se wird schneller eben gar. Yes, die Fett, die lüften sich auf Heiden, ihr Schäden im Bett, die Rahmen, die ihn gleiden. Wenn ich gefallen, se wird strahlen, weil jeder bleibt in Gott. Loni Hashem Lechon Yesh Tikve Di Liften Dich Auf Heiden Yesh Emine Mir Amen Die In Gleiden Bin Ich Gefallen Se Wird Strahlen Weil Jeder Bleibt In Gott Yesh Loni Hashem Sorgen gedenk als morgen, du nicht wer sag mehr, als du deutsch wohl in mir, was ist der einzigste Gott? Der Frieden trifft mich schlitt, weil lieb in der Gott.
Der Stiefe, der lüften sich auf Heiden, der Schem in der, die alle, die ihn bleiben. Wer ist gefallen, sie wird strahlen, weil jeder bleibt in Gott. Jetzt nur ihr Schem,
get healthy. At Encompass Healthcare, you get the state-of-the-art wound care like in a hospital. The same medicines, the same everything without being in a hospital. Why put yourself at risk of getting a hospital-borne infection? Did you know that last year, 1 in 6 people died in America because of infections they got in hospitals? Encompass Healthcare is an outpatient facility. That means you get your wound care treatment and then go home. There are no wait times at Encompass Healthcare like in ERs. Healthcare is personal and works better, faster, and easier. Encompass Healthcare provides a state-of-the-art outpatient facility close to where you live.
call 248-624-9800. That's 624-9800. Auto accident, workman's comp, and most insurance is accepted. Encompass Healthcare's goal is to get you healthy with as little disturbance to your daily activities. Call 248-624-9800.
Herschel Vimmin here. You're listening to the Jewish Hour. As I mentioned, I've been saying all along, it's Lag BaOmer. It's the 33rd day, which in Hebrew, every Hebrew letter has a numerical equivalent. So the numerical equivalent for the 33 is Lag, Lamed Gimel. 33 day of the count of the Omer. And on this day, Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai passed away. And he left over in his last will and testament that when I pass away, I don't want anybody crying. I want party day. Because it means that I have fulfilled my mission in this world, and I don't want anybody being sad because I'm going to a better place. And indeed, oh, I don't know which better place Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai might find himself in now because he hasn't come back and told us, but we do know about the life of Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai. Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai was Rabbi Akiva, the father of the oral tradition. He was his number two student. And when he was made number two student, he was a little bit miffed because he kind of thought that he should have been a number one student and Rabbi Meir was the number one student. But Rabbi Akiva said, it's enough that you and I alone know your greatness. I say about Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai that his feet weren't long enough to hit the ground. This was a person who really did not live in this physical world. He is best known for his redaction of the Zohar, which is it's written as a commentary on the five books of Moses and what's referred to as the five Megillas, which would be the book of Esther, the book of Ruth, the book of Song of Songs, the book of Lamentations, and the book of Ecclesiastes. And there's a whole story about him taking it on the lamb from the Romans who were killing rabbis at that time. He and his son spent 13 years living in a cave in the Judean hills someplace. We have no idea where that cave is. And survived by a carob tree, which was growing near, like right by the mouth of the entrance of that cave. And for 13 years, they stayed in that cave. What happened was, actually, at the end of 12 years, they got the high sign, it's safe to come out. And they came out. This is after spending 12 years engrossed in the very deepest Torah studies. Rabbi Elozer ben Shimon, Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai's son, saw a person farming. First thing he sees when he comes out of the cave, there's a farmer, and he's farming. He gave one look at this guy and reduced him to a pile of ashes. Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai said, no, that'll never do. And he gazed at the pile of ashes and turned him back into the farmer and said, we're going back into the cave. And he went back into the cave and he taught his son how to live in the world now. This is sort of like reintroducing the troops after the war, how to live back in society and not kill people, which is really what they were doing, what he had done. He said about the Zohar, this book that he wrote, he said, Abraham, who was the embodiment of godly kindness, was able to draw down enough kindness into the world to last from his time until my time. The making of the Zohar, this compendium, this book, is drawing down enough godliness to last from my time till the Messiah comes. It says about him that he never experienced the destruction of the temple, which is really very strange because he passed away, probably 80 years after the temple was destroyed. So what does it mean that he didn't experience the destruction of the temple? Well, people would go to the temple in Jerusalem, and it says the miracles were just flying around. There were so many miracles, they didn't even write them down. We know of 10 miracles that happened every single day, and those are written down. It was like, duh, you go to the temple, you have miracles. Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, the miracles didn't stop. He just had a whole nother way of looking at the world. There's a story that he lived in Meiron. He's buried in Meiron, which is the first mountain south of the city of Tzfat. It's a national holiday in Israel today. If you want to get anything done today, forget about it. The whole entire country is closed. People make bonfires. And outside the world, we're not so much into bonfires. Of the last night, I heard that around Oak Park in Southfield and major Jewish enclaves, there were some pretty hefty bonfires going on. But mostly we do barbecues. And Lubavitcher Rebbe came out that when Lag BaOmer falls out in the diaspora, like on a Sunday like today, or when it falls out on a Sunday, in the diaspora they should make parades and big rallies because people have time. And in Israel, since it's a national holiday, they make parades every year. So the major parade that's happening right now as we speak in New York City, and you can probably go to like collive.com and or maybe Chabad.org, I'm not exactly sure where it is. You can find it. And you can watch this year's parade. They usually get about 50,000 kids watching, and they have all kinds of festivities going on. It's going on all around, all over the country. There's all kinds of parades. Check your local listings. He sent his son, Rabbi Elazar, to the next mountain north, to Tzfat, to go get a blessing for a good life. So he makes the trick. Now, if you look at a map, Meron to Tzfat is about, it's maybe 3 miles away. But there's one problem, is Tzfat is on the top of a mountain, and Meron is on the top of a mountain. So if you could be a crow and you could fly it, it wouldn't take very long, but you have to go down the mountain and you have to go up the mountain. And the interesting thing about this walk is that you're always ending it going uphill. The first part of the walk is good. The second part of the walk, terrible. If you could reverse it somehow, well, but they're not on both sides of a valley. They're on both sides of a hill. You have to pack a lunch for on the way, and it takes a long time to do this. It's an all-day hike. So he gets to Tzfat, and it's like right before lunch, and he sits down, and among this group of people who are sitting and studying, they asked him, who are you? And he responded, he's Rabbi Elazar ben Shimon. So they got up there so happy. This is Rabbi Shimon's son. He said, so he's come. He's a big, you know, star celebrity guest. And he said, so, you know, we have to stop right now. And they made a big whole meal, you know. And they said, so what'd you come for? He said, well, my father said that I have to get a blessing from you guys. So they said, fine. So this is the blessing. May you go out and never come in. May your tent stand. May your house fall. May you never enjoy a first year. And may your table always be a mess. So he heard this. He picked himself up and left. He says, what? He says, what kind of blood? Who are you guys? So he made the trek down the mountain, up the mountain. And he's like really depressed. He's got this, what are they saying to me? Comes to his father. His father says, so what did they say? So he said, this is what they said. May I go out and never bring in. May my tent stand and may my house fall down. May I never enjoy a first year and may my table be a mess. So Shimon Bar Yochai started, yes! So Rabbi Elazar, his son, thinking to himself, my father wants to kill me. So he says, let me explain it to you. This is what it means. It is customary, I'm saying this as an aside, that when a person gets married, okay, let's say you're a guy and you marry a woman. The woman moves into your house. And so that you should bring in and not go out means that your sons shouldn't die so that their wives who have no business in your house anymore because they're not married to your son anymore, have to go back and live in their father's houses. Likewise, if you have a daughter, well, she's going to go live in her husband's house. If her husband dies, then she's got to come back. So he said, may you go out and not bring back. It says, what's the difference between a tent and a house? A house is permanent. A tent is temporary. There is nothing more permanent than the grave. So what they were wishing you is that you should merit to rise with the resurrection of the dead. And the tent that should stand forever is referred to as the tent of David, the third Beis HaMikdash, the third temple. May you never enjoy a first year. Sounds pretty ominous, except there's something in Hebrew called Shana Roshona. It's the year in which a couple is first married. And there's all kinds of laws. Like, for example, that a couple may not sleep under different roofs for the entire first year. We had to go through this, Mrs. Finneman and myself. And there were times when we had to really go out of our way to be able to, I would be much more convenient if I slept here. You slept there? No, first year we have to sleep under the same roof. There's other things also that they're excluded from because they have to get to know each other. He was already married. So they blessed him. You shouldn't need to take another wife. And the third thing, your table should be a mess. I used to tell people, listen, when I had seven kids coming in my house, you should have seen what my table looked like, my dining room table. It was always a mess. So he's blessing you. You should have lots of kids, and your kids should always be messing up your house. It's a good thing, as they say. This is the type of individual Shimon Bar Yochai was. This is the reason why the day that we're celebrating today is a big holiday, because he said, don't cry when I pass away. Because I'm going to a better place, because I know this world limits my abilities. The next world won't. We're going to take a quick commercial break, and we're going to be right back. Don't go away. You're listening to The Jewish Hour.
Hi, this is Spex Howard from the Spex Howard School of Broadcast Arts. We're happy to sponsor The Jewish Hour and bring quality radio programming to the community. While much of the funding for The Jewish Hour comes from its sponsors, it's listeners like you that help keep the Jewish Hour on the air. Please send your tax-deductible donation to the Jewish Hour, 14,000 West 9 Mile Road, Oak Park, Michigan, 48237. That's 14,000 West 9 Mile Road, Oak Park, Michigan, 48237. Your help is greatly appreciated.
Herschel Finman here. You're listening to The Jewish Hour. Want to get in touch with me? The best and easiest, most convenient way? Go to my website, rabbifinman.com, www.rabbifinman.com. Right on the homepage will be the Contact Us link. Click on it. You send me a message. It gets put right into my inbox. I send you a letter back. We become pen pals. We become BFFs forever. And which is what BFF stands for. That's a redundancy. We become BFs forever, best friends forever. And life is good. What else is on RabbiFinman.com? Well, you'll find archived editions of The Jewish Hour. Would you like to hear the Miriam Karp interview from last week? The Zeta's portrait? Yep, it's still there. It'll be up for about a month. If you would like to hear the Ephraim Zuroff interview that we did today, the rebroadcast of The Last Nazi Hunter, the award-winning show that got us national attention, that'll be up there for about 5 weeks. Go there to rabbifinman.com, click on the radio page. There's also classes. Every Monday night, I do a class in Tanya. We have been doing it since 2009, and they're all posted there. It's, between you and me, it's a very good class. Check it out. There's also the Hasidic U Parsha, the Hasidic U Story, the E Parsha. These are different media where yours truly convey ideas in an entertaining, hopefully, manner so that you can become more educated and a happier person. And, of course, there's the donations page. We need your funds. We're getting to the last end of the month. We need that last final hump. We now need those 36s and 25s and 10s and 5s and 3s. Do it. Go to The Jewish Hour and donate. God will appreciate it. Everybody listening will appreciate it. You'll appreciate it because you did a mitzvah. You connected yourself to God. I'll appreciate it because the Jewish Hour will be beyond air. And I love doing this show. I love being here for the community. It's a great thing. That's going to do it for the show. Oh, if you don't like doing that, send your donation to 14,000 West 9 Mile Road, Oak Park, Michigan, 48237. That's going to do it for us. We got to run out of here. We hope we had a chance to entertain you a bit. We hope we had a chance to educate you a bit. We hope to see you again next week. Enjoy the rest of Lag BaOmer. Don't get burned. Happy barbecuing. Have a good week.